The weekend is near and the next round of footy is finally upon us. And your ultimate guide to all the upcoming action lies within the Fox Footy Podcast Bunker. Welcome to Match Committee.
We should have been celebrating the 2020 AFL Premiers after a grand final at a packed MCG on Saturday. Instead, after this coronavirus enforced season, there's still nine finals to play outside of a lockdown Victoria. But one thing hasn't changed. It's that the trade whispers are rife and gathering more momentum by the day. We'll dissect all the latest player movement news, plus take a good look at the four week one finals on this latest socially distant edition of the Fox Footy Podcast. Ben Waterworth with you, as is the expert finals bracket predictor and consequently Brisbane and Port Adelaide hater, Max Lawton. Hello, Maxi.
That's me, Benny. Hello. To be fair, it's good that the grand final wasn't on a regular day because that and parade day were both yucky and rainy.
Oh, so shocking. I was thinking that, and I think a lot of people were thinking that, yes, would have been a horrible weather day. But a man who's not experiencing horrible weather that much, live from Sin City, is foxsports.com.au chief A-League correspondent Tom Morris. Hello, Thomas.
You've got to explain to the listeners what you mean by both of those things.
Well, you can explain it.
Well, Sin City is a nightclub in Surfers Paradise. And no, I haven't been there on this trip, and I don't intend to go there on this trip. But I must say, I did drop into a night spot on Saturday night with Eddie Maguire's son, Joe, who's a
real... Oh, has Eddie been to a nightclub on the Gold Coast?
Yeah, not Flamingos. Oh. And walking into a nightclub... Not only do I feel quite old, I'm 29, so I'm probably about 7 or 8 years too old at the least. But everyone's sitting down. You're not allowed to stand up at these nightclubs. So everyone's dancing with the top half of their bodies. It is one of the most bizarre things I've ever seen. I probably won't be going back, it's fair to say.
And what about being foxsports.com.au's chief A-League correspondent, Tom?
Well, along with an actual soccer journalist, Zach Rayson, last week, very good man. We broke a story that the Brisbane Roar, a former club of Ange Postecoglou, if my knowledge is correct.
Yes.
Not North Queensland Fury, Max. I know
exactly. Robbie Fowler's team.
Gold Coast United.
In lime green, North Queensland Fury. Anyway, Brisbane Roar, considering setting up camp, I guess, and moving their training base to Carrara, which is where the Gold Coast Suns are. So it was a bit of a cross code story, but it was always good to delve. It's always good to delve into other sports, and soccer is a sport I'm passionate about, but I'm far from an A-League expert. So Zach did a great job padding it out and making it seem somewhat readable.
It's a bit Brisbane Bears-ish playing at Carrara or being named after the capital. Interesting.
Yeah, well, Carrara is actually a good setup. We had a tour of the Gold Coast Suns last week, a few journalists, and the facilities are actually incredibly good. What are the old huts they used to have?
Like the portables.
The portable classrooms, they used to call them. And, with like the primary schools. And now they're an elite training facility. In fact, walking into the Gold Coast Suns changing rooms, I know that they had to do a bit of maintenance at the start of the year because they had 51 players on their list at the start of the year. And the change rooms didn't fit 51 players. So seeing where they stuck in an extra couple of lockers is quite funny. Like they've got one like deep in the diagonal corner, almost so whoever's in that corner can't reach the locker. But they won't be having that too many troubles anymore because the list sizes are going to be cut.
Ben, I'd just like to point out quickly to state the difference between Tom and I that he associates portables only with primary school and not with high school.
Yeah. Anyway. Yes. Well said, Maxie.
Oh, very good, Max. Well done.
Deary me.
Well done. I can't argue that, but it is good to be up here. I'm sitting on the balcony on floor 23 of this amazing apartment block. The sun is in my eyes, and it's a good place to be now with a month to go before the end of the season. Looking forward to this weekend's games.
And hopefully you're nice and clothed as well, Tom, as you look out across the Royal Beach horizon.
I've got a T-shirt on, so a bit Excellent. More than last
good
week.
good to hear, Tom. Maxi, today you put up a finals pressure gauge story, ranking which teams are under the most pressure heading into this finals campaign with Geelong coming in at number one, followed by Brisbane, Power and Richmond, and St Kilda coming in at last. Take us through sort of how you came to this, how you came to these conclusions.
Yeah, I mean, I think number one is pretty much the Cats with a bullet. Everyone knows how good they've been, the best home and away team of the last decade, and what an incredible run it's been with 11 top fours in 14 years or something nuts like that. But if they don't make at least make a grand final this year, it's going to be another year that most people will consider a failure. That might be harsh, but I think that's fair enough. And then you look at Port and Brisbane, and it's worth considering just how much of an advantage they have had this year and will have. Because in the finals, teams playing a team from interstate win 70% of the time. It's a really big advantage. And the fact that they both get two finals, two true home finals, whereas the only other team that's getting even one is West Coast, is such a big advantage. So while most people seem to think Richmond and Geelong are the best two teams, Port and Brisbane are the best placed. So it's a really interesting top four, and we'll go through all the games coming up. So that's why I think Port and Brisbane probably do need to deliver. And then Richmond are going for a third flag in 4 years, yet it doesn't feel like they're under heaps of pressure. Obviously, they're the favourite, so it would be a surprise if they didn't win it. But it's not like last year, where I feel like last season, if you'd asked me who would you take, Richmond or the field, I would have taken Richmond. This year, I'd probably take the other seven.
Yeah. Yeah.
How do you read it, Tom?
No, it's a really interesting. I did read that article. I agree with that with St Kilda 8th. I think even in their minds, they want to win, but they're not necessarily putting any high expectations.
Surely they've
on themselves.
Already passed this season. They've already reached their pass mark just to make finals.
It has. And who was it? When I was in the transition hub, Jared Roughead did a press conference, and he was asked, you know, at that point, there was still a chance to miss the finals. And they said, well, what if you miss from here? And he said, well, we've had a really good season, so it's not the end of the world. Now, I'm not suggesting for 1 second they're not going to be going gun-ho to win a final. But I do agree they probably passed expectations. Geelong is a really interesting case because, I mean, unless they win the premiership, it's almost like they've failed, which is really harsh. It's such a high bar to set, Max. Do you think it's a bit too high?
Yeah, well, I mean, on that basis, 17 teams fail every year, and that's ridiculous. So I understand Geelong's been a contender for so long, and they need to sort of turn that contention into something. And I think this year's a good chance because usually they probably do overachieve in the home and away season because of Cadinia Park, because of that extra one or two games that they win that other teams wouldn't because of the home ground advantage that they get. But yeah, geez, it's really tough to say that sort of thing. And one interesting thing with the Saints and the Dogs as well, really, because of how the finals bracket works out, they're in not a bad spot. It's like last year with the Giants and the Dogs. So they're in the 6v7 final. The winner of that game will probably play what you'd think Brisbane, assuming Richmond's going to beat Brisbane, which I think most people will be tipping. You're playing Brisbane in a semi-final at the Gabba. That's very winnable for the Saints. They lost there by 2 points just a month ago, and the Dogs weren't too far off when they played that game either.
Just that 1 second quarter, the Dogs got blown away in, but besides that, they were in that game for most of it.
I got a question for you, Max. Who's the most likely top four team to go straight sets?
Brisbane. Just because
it probably is
because of the first week, Port Adelaide has arguably the tougher matchups because they'd probably host West Coast in a semi-final. But I think Port Adelaide is a little bit better, and Brisbane having Richmond in the first week, they're the most likely of the top two teams to lose.
And I think if you ran into the Western Bulldogs in a semi-final, I think you'd be a pretty nervous side as well because Dogs have won five of their past six games and have got their game style going. They've got a game style that's very different to the other seven teams in terms of they play on a lot more and they're a high handball team, which is very different to a lot of other sides in, they have that slingshot game style where they don't necessarily have time in forward half. So they're a very different and difficult proposition for any team to run into.
The one thing that I do think needs to be taken into account, that game being at the Gabba, I don't remember where I read this analysis, but it was really interesting that how the one thing that you can tell about how all of these games at the Gabba in Queensland at night have affected game style, kicking works best. Kicking games go better than handball-heavy games. So the Saints are a pretty kick-heavy team, especially compared to the Dogs. Geelong is probably the most favoured in that sense. So I wonder how that's going to impact things. Assuming Geelong would host any of its games at the Gabba, that's a reason to believe in the Cats as well.
Yeah, and West Coast also has a high kick mark style, but they'll be starting in Perth, and I'm pretty sure they'll be happy to be starting in Perth as well.
And just on the Dogs, You know how Nick Del Santo coined on first crack about 6 weeks ago the sugar high don, sugar high dog. Sorry, it actually it probably works now. Like, have a little sugar high for a month in the season. Have this emotional pull that it's exactly what Luke Beveridge found a way to push his team on in 2016. I wouldn't be surprised if the Dogs made a prelim at least here. They just got this way to get themselves up for big games that other teams get themselves up, but they get themselves to another level.
Well, you mentioned emotional high there for the Dogs. We turn our attention to the bottom 10 of the ladder, Tom, and they just seems to be far from an emotional high at the moment at Essendon. And you've done a deep dive, almost expose on the Bombers, which is now almost foxfooty.com.au, and basically going through the job that awaits Adrian Dodoro to either keep or try and satisfy players' wishes to go to other clubs. It's, I suppose, as you mentioned at the start of the piece, the question going around at the moment is, what is going on at Essendon?
I said, what the hell is going on at Essendon? I could have substituted the word hell for another four-letter word, I reckon, as well.
Heck,
obviously. It's a question that everyone is asking. It sort of only dawned on me probably 24 hours ago that if everyone's asking it, why doesn't someone try to answer it? And I'm not sure how well I did actually try to answer it because there's so many competing factors. But spoken to a number of player managers, a number of people inside the club, another number of people just outside the club that have connections inside the club, other clubs about their views on what's happening at Essendon. And I sort of came to the conclusion in a roundabout sort of way that it's no one person's fault, but also nobody is faultless. That's sort of the best way I can describe it to you. So there's so many people at Essendon who deserve a portion of blame for where the club is at. And there's almost no one that can wash their hands and say, I've been absolutely perfect. Probably Jordan Ridley, given that he was the best and fairest this year. But I don't know where you want to start, Benny. Do you want to talk about the players or coaching?
Ultimately, I think as we're heading in towards the trade period and essentially at this time of the year, sometimes a club's situation translates into what happens at the trade table and how many players stay and how many players go. Or sometimes it's just as simple as how many players may have been linked to rival clubs because they might be wanting to move on. The one that's, I suppose, confusing a lot of people at the moment, or is a lot of people are unsure of where the situation is at, is Adam Saad, who has been linked to four clubs. You were sort of the first to report that Melbourne might have some interest in Adam Saad. There's also been links to Richmond, Carlton and North Melbourne. There's been varying reports over the past sort of 3 or 4 days, really, about where it all sits for Adam Saad. What's your understanding of where the situation sits?
Yeah, the varying reports are really interesting because my firm understanding is that not even Adam Saad knows what he's doing next year. Like, he is very much split down the middle, wrestling with his emotions, wrestling with his future, and doesn't know what way he's going to decide. And it's not necessarily about the money. It's about the direction of the club. He sort of epitomises the lack of direction at Essendon Football Club at the moment because all he wants is answers, and I get guarantees a bit strong, but probably a plan of attack that will see Essendon compete again. I mean, look at Adam Saad's career. He's been at the Gold Coast Suns. He came to Essendon looking for success. They haven't had it, albeit they made finals last year and they made him in 2017. So all he wants is to go to a club which he believes can give him the best chance of playing in big games and having success because he's a very reliable contributor. He's missed one game in 3 years. But wouldn't it just be a shot in the arm for Essendon if he went to Carlton? Because it's looking at the ladder position, it's not like Carlton are a huge way ahead of Essendon. Now, most people would think that Carlton are closer to a flag than the Bombers, but things can change pretty quickly. So my belief and my firm understanding is that Adam Saad is split right down the middle and that anyone who tries to say that he's leaning one way or the other is just guessing at the moment.
What's your hunch, Maxi, on the whole Essendon situation before we go through a couple of sort of player-by-player with Tom?
Yeah, you totally understand him wanting an understanding of where they're headed because they are probably the most muddled team in that sense. Maybe the Giants being the other one, but they've still got a bit more young talent in the team. Like, as we've been saying for a while now, Essendon's done all of this stuff to contend in the last 2-3 years, but they haven't contended. So if Essendon does want to start trading players out, trading out all these veterans and going for a proper rebuild, then why would Adam Saad want to be there? That you can understand. If he's told that, or if he's not told exactly what they're doing, I wouldn't be shocked if he left. But as Tom knows, and he's very resourceful on this sort of thing. Clearly, Saad doesn't know what he wants to do yet either.
What did you make of the link from AFL Media today of potentially a homecoming for Bashar Hooley from Richmond to Essendon?
It surprised me. Yeah, I mean, the thing is, and this is what I'm trying to weigh up all the time. And as is Mitch Cleary, who I think is a really good journalist, and other people around the place, you've got to weigh up the balance between a club talking or inquiring about a player to a club that's got genuine interest in a player to a club that offers a contract to a player and is, you know, and is
all in,
neck deep, all in. So I think probably Essendon is thinking, if we lose Adam Saad, who are our options to get back a player at half back? Now, one of those options was, the name escapes me. I did mention someone the other day. Who was the Essendon player I mentioned the other day? I actually can't remember. Someone's replaced. Oh, I know. The St Kilda back pocket.
Ben Patton.
Who's more of a back pocket, but still a small defender. And then another one is probably Bashar Hooley. So it did surprise me a bit because he's 32. But, you know, I think Essendon's looking for any ways they can to plug holes if they lose key players, and Adam Saad is a key player.
So the other players that have sort of been in the trade whispers in recent times, we all know about Joe Danaher, and that sort of still seems up in the air, and there hasn't been a lot of development in recent days. Orazio Fantasia, reportedly last week, set to undergo an independent medical with those results to be passed on to both South Australian clubs. So we'll see how that one plays out. And then Zach Merritt as well, Tom, which you kind of spoke about a little bit on the couch on Monday night.
Yeah, it's just so interesting because Zach Merritt's got a year to go on his contract. And I think Adrian Dodoro would ask for at least two first-round picks and maybe a player for Zach Merritt. Like, there's no way that Dodoro is going to be able to trade him. But it just doesn't stop clubs asking the question, considering how they can potentially go about doing it. And they've got a connection with Port Adelaide, the Merritts. I don't know the specific details, but I think Zach Merritt, and his brother, they played under one of Ken Hinckley's best mates down in down Geelong way. So the Hinckleys know the Merritts, and they clearly really like him, as most clubs would. I've got no doubt that Hawthorn really likes him. Now, this could just be planning 12 months ahead, but it nevertheless is sort of in play now. And we all know what happens in trade period. Things that seem completely fanciful 3 months out, or even 6 weeks out, they get more and more real as you get closer. So I think it was just important to put it on the agenda. I don't think it's going to happen. I can't see how it's going to happen. But, geez, stranger things have happened. And I think Zach Merritt's a talented player, but clearly there's unrest at Essendon, and other clubs are sensing that. And they're just considering how they could potentially go about working out a way to get him to the club, if not now, when he comes out of contract next year.
It makes some sense for Essendon from the perspective of, if you know he was going to leave, if you did know, then you want to get as much value as possible before they go as a free agent. And if he's going to be a free agent at the end of next year, I assume he would be restricted, not unrestricted, but
he's restricted, yeah.
Yeah, so you want to get as much possible. So there's a bit of a trend of teams looking at these pre-agents, as it's been coined, of who can we get before they come out of contract. And the club, therefore, if you're getting two first-round picks as Essendon, it's better than having Zach Merritt for a season where you finish 12th in 2021 and then trading him for one first-round pick. You know, you're getting more in the long run by doing it earlier.
And, Ben, the thing about that is, look at Adrian Dodoro and his role in this entire thing. Joe Danaher had a year to run on his contract last year when he requested a trade to Sydney.
Yes.
He's a restricted free agent now. So we've seen how it plays out, and it's pretty ugly. It's not good for anyone, really, how the Danaher situation has played out. It frustrated the player. Clearly, the Swans would have liked to get him. He might not go to the Swans now. So does Zach Merritt really want to sit on a list next year when he knows he's leaving, especially if he is leaving, especially if Essendon... if Essendon aren't really in contention? And does Essendon want to keep him there? Like, there's just so many issues. But also, Dodoro knows, and the Bombers know, and any club knows, that they can't let players hold them to ransom. So if a player wants to leave with a year left in his contract, then they can say that. But Dodoro and the club are under no obligation to get that deal done.
There's a lot of players still out of contract at the Bombers. One of them is Braden Ham, Tom, who's played 15 games for the Bombers since he was a late pick in the 2018 draft, and he's looked okay in sort of the glimpses the Bombers fans have seen. What's the latest on him?
Well, he's played 10 games this year, Benny, and he's the third most improved player at Essendon after Brandon Zerk-Thatcher, who's second, and of course Ridley was the most improved player, according to Champion Data. And he hasn't re-signed next year, and he's just attracting some interest, some preliminary interest from some clubs who need some running players. So I think Melbourne, think maybe St Kilda or Collingwood and clubs like that. I'm sure that these clubs and others are just asking the question where that's at. And he's a bit down the pecking order. He's not unlike what Harry Perryman was at GWS and other players at other clubs. When there's big fish that need a fall, so that's Danaher at Essendon, these players get put on the back burner, and that's just what perks the interest up of other clubs. I think he'll probably still stay, but it doesn't mean that other clubs aren't considering what it would take to get him in, either via a trade it wouldn't cost them a lot, or even as a delisted free agent if the Bombers decide they can't afford to keep him, which would be an unusual move, but not completely out of the equation.
Well, we'll keep your eye on foxfooty.com.au for all the latest trade whispers, and certainly get your eyes on Tom's deep dive into the Bombers, which is a great read. Maxie, before we hit record on this podcast, Heath Shaw was officially delisted by the Giants.
Yes, I think we had an inkling this could be coming. He's 35, I believe, Heath Shaw. You understand the Giants wanting to look ahead, but he wants to play on, I think, is the general view of things. Tom, what do you know about the potential for Heath Shaw's future?
Well, the writing was on the wall after the GWS round 18 game against St Kilda. I was in the press conference with Leon Cameron, and we asked him, what's the go with Heath Shaw? And he said that he'd had a conversation with Heath Shaw that week and just decided to put it on the back burner for a couple of weeks and assess down the track. We reported on the Fox Footy website maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago, I think it was, that if Heath Shaw was to stay at GWS, he'd be on a significantly reduced pay packet and with no guarantee of senior football. But as it's turned out, the Giants are looking elsewhere. They feel like they can replace him with a younger player. I believe he still wants to play on. I'm not sure in what capacity. There's been a few rumours about North Melbourne, but again, I asked Reece Shaw that in the press conference after their last game, and he scoffed at it. He said, nah, he's no good anymore. So he sort of laughed it off. But he said he had lunch with his brother that day. I wonder whether North Melbourne could just think about it, given the soft cap cut, whether they could have him as pay him under the salary cap, but have him as sort of a VFL, AFL contributor who can do some assistant coaching and some development coaching. It makes sense from a financial standpoint, but you don't also want him to clog the list. So it's a really difficult one for Heath Shaw, who wants to play on, but doesn't necessarily want to go to a club where he's going to be a nuisance rather than a help.
It would be a nuisance either way, but possibly in a positive sense.
Wrong word. I think, you know what? I'll put my flag in the ground here. I think that North Melbourne should pick him up. There you go.
Go for it.
Sorry. They've delisted 11 players. You know, and then they're trading Ben Brown. There's lots of gaps on their list. Well, who does it hurt paying him? And I'm being serious here. Paying him $180,000 a year plus match payments, which is not much at all for a player of Heath Shaw's record, and saying, hey, Heath, you're no guarantee to play any games this year. You might play some games. You'll definitely play VFL for us. But we need you to also do 6 hours a week of work on the computer or craft work with our young running defenders and wingmen. What about that? And I reckon he'd say yes to that. And he gets to play a year with his brother and maybe play a few more AFL games.
I suppose the thing that North Melbourne have got to weigh up, and you know, it's been potentially a little bit of a criticism over the past couple of years, maybe not necessarily this year because they did make some hard calls at selection, but that he's not necessarily blocking a young player's actual game time development. So he might be working with them during the week off the field, but Shaw, as a development sort of coach, on-field development coach, isn't blocking the development of another young North Melbourne player. So that's something that he and North Melbourne have got a way up.
I think you're only blocking the development if you're guaranteed to play games when there's a younger player there. If there's no guarantee of games, then I don't see the negative in getting a player in like that.
What about Brad Crouch, Tom? Obviously, he got himself in some trouble with the South Australian police in the early hours of Monday morning when a taxi that he was in alongside teammate Tyson Stengel was stopped by police. and they were found to have an illicit substance. No charges were laid, but that doesn't mean that they get away scot-free in terms of they've got some counselling to go through, or they've it'll certainly be addressed in that sense. But I suppose from a footy perspective, what does it mean from a Brad Crouch trade or free agency perspective? Because he's had a pretty high asking price in recent times.
Yeah, my understanding is it's high 800s, maybe even as close to close to 900 over 5 years he wanted from the Crows. And that price has broadly been replicated around the league to different clubs as well. Maybe not quite as high as high 800s, but clearly he feels like, and his management feel like, he's worth a fair bit of money on a long-term deal, which would give Adelaide that coveted high draft pick back. I said this on the couch last night, I spoke to a couple of list managers that aren't interested in Brad Crouch, and they just said that it's probably not going to be a red flag for these clubs. It's sort of a first misdemeanor. I don't want to say it's minor, but it's not exactly an unusual thing in the AFL world. I think Nick Riewoldt spoke about it really well last night. You know, let's be honest, like recreational drug use in AFL clubs is not a completely foreign concept, and that's probably putting it lightly. And I'm not saying that in any other way than just as a fact. But the very fact that it occurred at this time, when he's potentially looking elsewhere and other clubs are doing their due diligence, probably hurts him a little bit from a price tag, but I don't think it's going to turn any clubs completely off him. What do you reckon, Max?
Yeah, no, if you want a player of Brad Crouch's caliber, this is not something that's going to make you pick a different player, because, you know, as you mentioned, it's a common thing for, let's say, men of that age group, as much as anything.
certainly
ones with disposable income. So it could be an issue if it does end up giving the Crows a lesser pick, though. If it does knock 100K off his salary, that might be enough to drop a compensation pick down from first round to end of first round, which is a relatively big deal, given it's the difference between pick one and pick 22.
If that was the case, then I think if Adelaide would read the play and they would match the bid and then force a trade. That's what I think they would do.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Which hasn't happened before in free agency history, even though it was
danger?
Sort of. Well,
that
was a trade.
Yes, they traded before. They said, we will match, so we will trade first, sort of thing.
Yeah, okay.
That's how Dean Gore got involved.
Yes, Dean Gore, brother of Al. So. I always love a reference. Max, I was going to ask you about the Supreme Court kerfuffle in America, but probably not for the right podcast.
A bonus episode, I think, later. I think from a Brad Crouch perspective, I think no matter what, his last 4 weeks, and he's kind of returned to form in the last 4 weeks, has mirrored Adelaide's a strong finish to the season as well. He had a really good past month, so that will certainly do. While his latest off-field misdemeanor certainly doesn't help his chances, he'd be glad that he's got those 4 solid weeks under his belt as he heads into a pretty important time in his AFL career. But we're about to head into a very important time on the Fox Footy podcast, because it's time for Australia's favourite segment, Fair or Farce.
Here we go. All right.
I like that segue.
So there's 5 fair or farces here. So unfortunately,
perfect
for Ben,
the two of
you
us.
Ben gets 2 and Max gets 3. But Max's third one's a bonus fair or farce. So really, it's 4 fair or farces that are normal, then a 5th for a bonus one. Anyway, I hope you've picked that up. So fair or farce, Ben, the week off before finals should stay fair or farce.
I really struggled to be objective in this, because I actually really enjoyed the weekend off just gone. But I think that the common consensus is that it's a farce, Tom. I think that, especially this year, considering we had such a high level of condensed matches this year, where we had 2 footy frenzies, and then we get to this big crescendo and climax in round 18, and then we have 9 days off before the next game, and then we have 9 games across a period of 30-odd days, and we had 30-odd games in a period of 20-odd games twice, just didn't make sense. So I think it was the wrong move this time, but I suppose you can understand from an AFL perspective why they brought it in, to try and freshen clubs up and players up, because they have made some pretty big sacrifices for the Australian community this year.
There's one sort of issue with it that I have, and you know, the whole point was to combat teams resting players, which I don't have a problem with anyway. But what it's doing, and I've looked at some of the numbers for a piece on foxfooty.com.au on Wednesday morning, is how it's impacting the teams that get the double bye, which is when you have the pre-finals bye, win a qualifying final, semi-final weekend off, and then hosting a prelim. So from 2000 to 2015, which is when we had this normal finals format, 28 out of 32 times, the prelim winner was a qualifying final winner. You were going win, bye, straight through to the grand final. Very, very normal. 28, four teams coming and winning off a semi-final. Since the pre-finals bye was introduced, it's 4-4. It's even, 50%. As many teams are winning, having played a semi-final, as did in the 16 seasons previous. It's a big change. It surprised me when I looked up just how much it has changed the game. And that does suggest that there is something about being overly rested that is hurting some teams.
That's really interesting numbers, Max. Yeah, I look forward to reading that. The other element to all of this, and Jared Waitley's big on this, and I listened to him on SEN yesterday morning. His editorial was about it. He reckons that the primary reason why the AFL has the bye before finals is to allow more time to sell tickets to the games. What do you think of that?
I'm sure it does, because they only put the tickets on sale on today and Monday, I believe.
Yeah, so he's cynical. I mean, he thinks that they're hiding behind the facade of allowing resting for players, when in fact they just want to make more money, which is an interesting take. It's something I hadn't thought about before. It sort of reminds me of when you're watching the FIFA World Cup, Benny, and you're so used to watching two or three games a day, it's just all the time, that all of a sudden you get to the semis and the quarters and you're like, oh, hang on, when's the next match? And you're so used to being on every night or every few nights here at the moment, and then it's just not. I guess it builds anticipation, but anticipation is such a vague thing anyway. It's such a subjective. I'd look forward to a qualifying final just as much if I had 5 days off beforehand as I would if I had 9 days off beforehand.
I just wonder. I wonder if our maturity levels from an AFL perspective, in terms of how we move past the want or the need to be in uproar around players resting or clubs resting players in the final home and away round, because obviously it was in the early 2010s, St Kilda and Fremantle were well renowned for resting players en masse.
What's the common denominator there?
Well, Ross Lyon was the coach of both teams. But it happened in the NRL on the weekend. Like a lot of top teams in the NRL.
It happens everywhere.
Yeah, rested players. It happens obviously in US sports. The odds in the NRL changed dramatically over the weekend, and obviously some results went in some curly directions as well. Whether it's like the pre-finals by actual reason, the intended initial reason has sort of passed its use by date. I think we probably won't know until we scrap it and we give it another crack. So, But Gil said in your interview yesterday that it's basically certainly happening in 2021, Tommy.
He said definitely. And they canvassed, I think, the top 10 or the top 12 clubs toward the end of the year, and all but two said they wanted the pre-finals by. So they're, you know, they are listening to the clubs in this respect. Max, fair or farce? The dew at the Gabba in big games will be a huge issue. Fair or farce?
Farce. I remember tweeting about it. I don't remember which game, but there was a night game at the Gabba where the skills were as good as I've seen all year. So it's not always a problem. There will be times when it's a problem. There's dew in many games at the Gabba, but look, if it happens, it happens, and the teams are just going to have to deal with it and play around it. It's not like if it rains during a grand final, that's a disaster either. You just play through it. So I think people are making a bigger deal out of that than they need to. I'll try and find which game that was, by the way.
Ben, can I make a suggestion that we get Alistair Lynch on the podcast before the grand final?
To talk about veterans cricket?
Yes. You know what? He had two spaces free on Saturday and asked if Joe Maguire and I could play. And we said, yes, we could do anything else. And then his captain, unbeknownst to him, had already found two people, so he could play. But I was looking forward, and it wasn't veterans, it was thirds. Anyway, that's beside the point. What I was saying was, Lynchy will be able to explain it better than me, Benny, but he was saying to me at the Gabba ahead of the Collingwood-Port Adelaide game, which was completely dry and there was no dew whatsoever, that the grass is different. And what happens is it gets sticky when it's not humid. And when it is humid, it gets really, really wet. So it's one way or the other. And when it's sticky, that goes on the ball and it means there's better marking and better skills all over the ground. But it'd be worth getting him on before the grand final, the voice of Queensland, football and the linchpin. Because yes, he's the face of football up here at the moment.
Good man, a loyal man.
A very loyal man. All right, Ben, to you, fair or fast. Staying in Brisbane, the Lions' long losing record against Richmond means nothing. Fair or fast?
No, I'm going to say that's a farce. With the caveat, though, of what something that Maxi pointed out in a piece in recent days of the Lions' last two performances against Richmond. So the Lions' inaccuracy has been their Achilles heel. Well, was their Achilles heel in the final series last year? They kicked 19 goals, 31 combined in their home losses to the Giants and to the Tigers. And then in their last two games against the Tigers, so one of them was the final, and then it was midway through the season, the Lions kicked something like four goals then double figure behinds. So, but they were able to match the Tigers in most statistics. So it depends on how much faith you've got in the Lions, whether they can address those accuracy needs, because I think they've probably addressed everything they need to in terms of beating Richmond around the ground. They can match them in the territory game. They know certainly how to get the ball inside 50. I think Richmond's strength is definitely not around the ball at the coalface and the clearances. Brisbane has certainly got them covered in that manner. Harris Andrews returns and Tom Lynch isn't going to be there. So a lot of things point in Brisbane's favour to actually win this game. A lot of it, I think, will come down to how accurate they are in front of goal, or probably more importantly, Maxi, what kind of shots the Lions get, whether they're directly in front or whether they're from the sides, which Richmond has been able to force in recent games.
Yeah, this has been Brisbane's thing all year. They're one of the best teams at creating shots, but just the worst at getting them through. So goal accuracy can be very variable. So I would rather be the team that's creating a bunch of shots and happens to be missing them than the team that creates minimal shots but kicks straight. Because you know that you've got... You know you've got a shot if you're at least creating those chances. Like the Lions are not a 40 points worse team than Richmond as they have been the last two times they played. They're just not.
I think it's fair enough to say that it's good for the finals if Brisbane beat Richmond. Make the Tigers do it the hard way and keep the Lions away from...
Yeah.
I would hate if the Lions went into next year with back-to-back straight sets. That would be very disappointing. They played better footy than that.
I think something that may have gone a little bit unnoticed in the whole Richmond recent finals form talk is that Richmond have won their past three qualifying finals. They haven't had to play a semi-final in the past in the past three seasons. And I immediately kind of thought back to Hawthorn's three-peat in 2015 when they lost to West Coast in that first qualifying final but had to do it the hard way and then beat West Coast at the MCG in that grand final. Hawthorn was able to do it via losing a qualifying final and then winning a semi-final. I wonder how the Tigers will go if they do go down to the Lions, if they have to go through a semi-final this time.
I wonder when the last time they played a semi-final was. It'd be 0-1, wouldn't it, before they played the prelim against Brisbane?
Oh, yes. They would have played Carlton in the semi-final, I think. They would have.
Yes, 0-1.
Mm. In 0-1, yes, yeah. Anyway, last one to you. Now, I had to choose who I was going to ask this to because I know that you both enjoy going out to nightclubs and having huge nights and big weekends. Applicable, but I've gone with you, Max, just because I think you're slightly more loose on the D-floor type operation.
Yeah.
So, Max.
I beg to differ.
Fair or fast, Eddie Maguire shouldn't have been at a Gold Coast night spot.
I mean, I've been to the Stanford, I've been to the pool room, which closed down 10 years ago in Ferntree Gully.
FTG.
What are we doing? I mean, my argument with this is nothing to do with football. It's just that I'm not sure why people are going to nightclubs during a pandemic. I understand that Queensland's got things relatively well sorted, but no, look, he's up there for work. What he does outside of work hours, as long as it's legal, isn't that big of a deal to me. I think sometimes people look for a bit of a furor and there probably shouldn't be one. I'm sure as a nightclub participant with Eddie Maguire, Tom, you would agree with me.
Well, I wasn't there. I'm not a nightclub.
Not that time, the other time.
No, that's with Joe. I agree. I think people talk, the optics aren't good. Well, what the hell is it? What are the optics? Like, you can either do something or you can't. And I had no issue with him going across to Flamingos for an hour and by the way, which is next to a restaurant, you know, and Flamingo sounds nice and fancy, but there's no dance floor here. Everyone's sitting down at these nightclubs on the Gold Coast, as I explained earlier. So,
good info. Yeah.
Anyway, last
Thanks
one.
Thanks for the insight, Tom.
Last one to you, Maxi, again.
Oh, good.
I did say that I'd give you a.
Yeah, so I'm glad you went with me second then. That's good.
Fair or farce, Adelaide's esports team is better than their actual football team.
I mean, at esports, yes. This is very important. They the legacy esports of the League of Legends World Championships. They beat a European team. It's the first time an Oceanic team's beaten a team from one of the major regions, Tom. China or Europe or the US. It's incredible.
Max, put it in context for us. Is it like North Queensland Fury beating Bayern Munich?
Well, they might be from Germany. No, it's... It, what is it like? It's like New Zealand having a chance to win through to the knockout stages of the World Cup.
Ooh.
I think would be. It's from a small region, you're getting a shot. Australian teams always get one World shot.
Dotted by the ridiculous rule.
Yeah, I know.
That's the end of Fair or Farce, Ben, and a great finish from Max.
Well, no, I appreciate that. I'm sure dual premiership crow Maxi Nigel Smart would have been leading the way there.
He is. He tweeted at me last night thanking me for my support, actually.
You know what's funny about that? Max has this bent to when anyone tweets to him, he says they tweet at me. It's almost like they're slapping him across the face.
It's not a conversation. They're talking at me. That's how it works.
It makes you think they're shouting at you. They talk to you. Or talk with you, not at you.
I don't want to assume friendship.
And of all the people on this podcast... The most people, the most Twitter users that tweet at any of us, they tweet at me abuse. You guys don't get too much abuse.
Well, that's because I respond to people and then try and have conversations with them.
Yeah, it's easier sometimes than others. Anyway, end of fair enough.
Speaking of people tweeting at us.
Oh, yes.
Maxi, people have been tweeting at a certain Fox Footy post recently around a call out for questions for the mailbag.
Well done. Very, very good segue. Ben, as always, yes, let's get stuck into the mailbag. Let's start with Mark, who has a bit of a trade question. And I imagine, Tom, you can explain what's going on here. With Collingwood possibly freeing up cash with Beams, Langdon, Reed, Greenwood and Varco, I think he's just retired some players, surely they would be making a play for a key forward like Jeremy Cameron or Ben Brown, as well as signing Jordan Degoe and Darcy Ball. Would that be enough cap space to do that, Tom?
I don't have Ned Guy's Excel
balance
document
sheet there?
In front of me.
Yeah.
I don't have the balance sheet with the formulas and the whole lot. I think it's going to be hard to sign Jeremy Cameron if they keep Darcy Moore and Jordan Degoe. They're worth a lot of money between them. I think if one of them decided to go, which I don't think they will, but if one of them decided to look elsewhere, then they could probably make a play. I mean, I read today that the offer for GWS from GWS to Jeremy Cameron is only about $700,000. So I'd expect it to be looking for more than that if he was going to leave the Giants. It's a good question because like Essendon and like GWS, and as we explained before with Braden Ham, the Collingwood Football Club, everyone is waiting for list sizes and also to see what Jordan Degoe and Darcy Moore do. Once those dominoes fall, there'll be a lot better clarity. I can't give much more than that because I don't have the Excel documents in front of me, but it would surprise me if they could sign Jeremy Cameron and Moore and Degoe, but they are absolutely looking for a key forward.
Yeah, I wonder if structurally, I think Ben Brown would be perfect at the Pies in terms of they've just been looking for that key forward, that reliable key forward who comes out and, you know, takes those marks in the lead. They kind of haven't really sort of had that player. Mason Cox is that, you know, you sit it on his head and you'll pluck a contested mark. Mychek probably isn't that player. He would give the Pies so much structure. I just don't know whether Ben Brown going to Collingwood would be the best thing for Ben Brown, particularly after he's had a season where he's had a huge form slump and the pressure of being the main man inside the Collingwood forward line with the Pies, you know, potentially coming off an elimination finals exit should they go down to West Coast this weekend. I don't know if that would be the right fit for him personally.
It's kind of crazy when you think about it. We're going into the finals and we're sort of just all completely counting out Collingwood for a team that probably... Round 6, round 7 was the premiership favourite. It's just like, well, they're not going to beat West Coast in Perth, so that's them.
No team relies more on a player than Degoe, than Collingwood on Degoe. And that's partly because Degoe is so good, but it's also partly because the rest of the Collingwood team has misfired throughout this year. They've been inconsistent.
Yeah. I was going to say Nick Nat with West Coast, but obviously winning a flag does negate that somewhat.
Yeah.
Proves me wrong a little bit. Lawrence asks, media blasting Carlton about Zach Williams' deal, which supposedly started upwards of 900K a season and now seems to be around 700, 750K per season, however still considered bad. What would be considered a good pickup? The Blues would have been blasted for not chasing him, so they can't win. When we do love it when the media is all grouped together, because we're all the same.
That's right. It will, again, bit of confusion about this. My firm belief is it is somewhere between $850,000 and $900,000 a year. But I don't know whether it's front-ended or back-ended or middled or whatever. But I've never criticised Carlton. If they think they can pay it and get a player in, good on them. Pay the deal. Get the player in. The issue will be next year or the year after if they can't pay Cripps what he wants or they can't pay any other players they want to get what they want. But, you know, it's not for me to judge what a player does with a salary cap. So I wouldn't be criticising that, Ben.
So according to your knowledge, Tom, both Brad Crouch and Zach Williams have, either demands or contract offers that are $850,000 to $900,000.
Yeah.
Who would you more likely pay that cash to, Brad Crouch or Zach Williams?
I'd pay it to Williams. Would you?
I would also pay it to Williams.
But, I mean, yeah, I'd absolutely pay it to Williams. But I think Crouch is probably worth 700, 750. It's not, I mean, you put an 8 or even a 9 in front of it, it sounds ridiculous, but it's only $100,000 or $150,000 more than a 7 in front of it. You know what I'm saying?
So, yeah, and it's one of those things where you have certain amount of spaces for your top-end talents on your list, and you're also front-loading or back-loading depending on what you need for certain years. So that's averaging it out. But it depends on what can actually fit into your TPP structure anyway.
I mean,
and what type of player you need too. If you might need Brad Crouch more than you need Zach Williams.
That's right. So we scoffed at Dan Hannanbury getting paid roughly $800,000 a year, I think, for 4 years with a trigger for a fifth. Bradley Hill getting paid good money. The players themselves might not necessarily be worth that amount. They might be, but they might not be. But what it does to the football club gives this sense of ambition. And brings in players down the track because, look, oh, geez, you've got Hannanbury or Bradley Hill there. So I'm going to go there because I think you're pretty close. And I think that aspect of it is probably underrated.
I'd still scoff at the Hannanbury signing, but I understand
I think it's too much. But when you have the money, you may as well spend it. And I don't think they get players they've got in the ensuing years if they don't have Hannanbury.
That's all fair.
Yep.
Our old friend Lamingtons has a question. Following on from the previous question. So if teams such as GWS, Melbourne, Fremantle or Carlton are expected to contend for finals next year, who falls out of the top eight?
We can't predict the 2021 top eight now.
Why not? We do it in March and we know about as much as we do now. Yeah, sure. I mean, we don't know who lost the finals. But
I'll tell you one thing. You know, every year, I can't see who's going to drop out. You know, Max, we say it every year, and Ben, we say it every year. There is always one or two that drop well out and have a terrible season, and the same will happen next year. It's never the same top eight.
There's always around 2.5 teams that drop out. Some seasons it's three. The average is close to three teams that drop out every year. And what did we have this year? We had Essendon and GWS drop out. I think it was the two.
Yep.
So, that's what happens, and everyone always overrates. Remember when everyone's top four this year was Richmond, West Coast, GWS, and Collingwood.
Yeah, except for yours.
One of them made the top, except for mine, yes, of course.
Yeah. Max didn't have GWS in the top eight, which actually, it's almost like it just shows you're bat crazy, really, not having Giants in the top eight. You'd be the only person in Australia who didn't have the Giants in their top eight.
And it was based on the fact that, two or three teams always drop out. GWS finished seventh or sixth, whatever it was last year, and was not as good as everyone thought. Like, teams drop out. So if I was to pick right now who would drop out, realistically, I would say the Dogs, because they only got in the last round again, so they're on the edge. And I would probably say Collingwood, because they have the worst percentage and were otherwise the worst team. So that's two. And then you look at the finals results and see if there's anything you can kind of pull from that. But that's how it goes. There's always two or three, and everyone underrates that.
Lamington, send the questions in March, and we'll have a better answer for you then.
Yes, looking forward to it. Last one from Andy, and I think this probably leads into a bit of discussion coming up. The finals start on Thursday night. It's good to know. We should do some planning. Please pick your two grand final teams and premiership and Norm Smith and Brownlow.
Oh, oh God. Does he want the Jock McHale as well? Oh, that's an obvious one, I guess.
He's going to pick a different one. Good luck.
I think Richmond will win the grand final. And Max, I think Geelong are the second best team, but is it possible for Geelong to play Richmond in a grand final if Richmond beat Brisbane?
Yes, it certainly is if Geelong beats Port Adelaide.
Okay, good. So, I think Richmond will play. I think Richmond and Geelong are the two top seeds. That's my opinion, which is ridiculous because I'd love Port all year. Norm Smith in that game, you can't go past Dusty. He's won two Norm Smith. Has anyone ever won three Norm Smiths? I'm not sure they have.
No, I think there's only a lot of people have won multiple Norm Smiths. Gary Ayres, Andrew McLeod, Luke Hodge.
Oh, how good was Andrew McLeod? And what's the other? And Brownlow, Lachie Neale, easy one.
Yeah, I think I'm a Port Adelaide and Brisbane believer. I think Port Adelaide and Brisbane will win the two finals this weekend, and we'll meet each other in the grand final.
Who do you want to win the flag if it's not Geelong, gentlemen?
I would love Port Adelaide to win the flag just simply because of the storyline of how much pressure. This has all been forgotten. How much pressure Port Adelaide and Ken Hinckley were under heading into this season.
And they put themselves under that.
What they have achieved this season and how they've gone about it has been absolutely remarkable. So I would love to see Port Adelaide win it from that perspective.
Same.
I would love to see Brisbane win it. I mean, the spectacle of them winning it at the Gabba would be nice. I mean, there'd always be the asterisk over it being at the Gabba, but I think it would be fun to see. And they're such a fun attacking team. And Chris Fagan, you can't not love him as a coach and as a guy. And then, you know, like a St Kilda or Bulldogs doing it from the bottom half of the eight would be an amazing story as well. Like, I don't think I'd be unhappy with any of the teams winning it. There's times in previous years where I've thought, that'd be okay, but I'm not that interested. But really, every team would have a fantastic story if they made it from where they are right now. And by the way, all your predictions, Tom, were mine, so thank you.
No worries.
So let's quickly run through the games for this weekend. Not only final spots and preliminary final spots up for grabs and sudden death, eliminations, the consequences there for losers. But, of course, the Cups are up for grabs this weekend, starting with Port Adelaide and Geelong on Thursday night for the Paul Kouliotis Cup.
But he doesn't like that this is his cup. He's confused by it, isn't he?
One of only three players to play for both Port Adelaide and Geelong. But hey, good to see early in the year he got behind the Port Adelaide Cup. Unfortunately, though, he's a Geelong supporter, I think he is. His heart still lies with the Cat. So
there we go.
Good afternoon to Paul, if he's listening in.
It's I've already been having nightmares about what time would it be, about 8:10 p.m. on Thursday night, and Port Adelaide's already up 5 goals on Geelong. I'm terrified it's going to happen again in a final. They're going to have a bad start. So I can never tip with my head with these games. I'm saying Geelong because I think they're the second best team, but this is probably the toughest game to tip for me.
I agree with that.
The nightmares too, or
something about Port Adelaide just gives you this hope with emotion, but I've just got to put that to one side. And I think Geelong have been so good all year. I've loved the way they've played. I'm tipping the Cats.
Lions and Tigers on Friday night for the Rory Hilton Cup. No Tom Lynch, but Dion Prestia likely to be back for the Tigers, and the Lions get back Harris Andrews.
Yeah, I'm actually tipping the Lions here. Mostly because I think you need to pick an upset of some sort in week one of the finals. I think Richmond are really well primed, but something about the Lions just fills me with this feeling like they're going to go. So I don't know. I'm tipping the Lions just because I have the feeling more than anything else.
I would like to feel the same way, but I can't go past Richmond still because I still think they're going to win it all. So yeah. I think the simplest way is to win this game, which I don't believe in, like the history and the streak being a big factor. I just think they're the better team. So I think they should get the job done, but it'll be closer.
St Kilda and the Bulldogs, the second elimination final, obviously for the Luke Penny Cup, the time-honoured Luke Penny Cup.
I remember Luke Penny. I've told you Luke Penny, the connection with Luke Penny and me, haven't I?
Potentially, Tom, but we've done a lot of podcasts over the years, so my memory's a bit faint.
I'll tell you, because I know you're interested, the family that lived over the road from me when I was growing up, Luke Penny was their second cousin, and he dropped in one day wearing a St Kilda beanie and I recognised him as Luke Penny in about 01. I couldn't believe what is Luke Penny doing in the street anyway, and I'll never forget it.
That's quite incredible. I don't know, Maxie, do you find this? Sometimes the second elimination final, in all the hype of finals in general, just tends to get lost. Just the game, the second elimination final. And St Kilda and the Bulldogs, you know, two Victorian clubs, but not in Victoria this year, and not big Victorian clubs. I just feel like this game is, maybe if it wasn't for St Kilda being in their finals, breaking their finals drought, this game hasn't got a lot of attention, I have to say.
Yeah, and not the biggest clubs as well, which always plays a part, but it makes sense because the 5v8 final is usually a team that almost made the top four against a team that just snuck in, whereas this is two pretty even teams. So that makes a lot of sense to get some
Should
good games
contest.
Out of it. Yeah, no, I'm very much looking forward to this. And it's fascinating too because I like how the elimination finals have fallen because you've got the West Coast Collingwood one where it's two teams everyone thought were a flag contender. Only one of them's going to be in the final six, which is kind of crazy. And St Kilda and the Dogs, one of them being in the semi-finals is maybe not overachieving, but certainly a fantastic achievement given where we thought most these teams would be coming into the year. So it's fantastic either way. I'm going to go with the Saints. I think they're a bit closer to the top six than the Dogs have been all year. So I think they've been the better team. And we sort of all fell for the Dogs last year when they run four or five and then run into GWS and suddenly forgot how to play GWS even though they'd thrashed them 3 weeks earlier. So I'd like to see the Saints win this one.
I think the Saints will win. Yep. I think they've got something brewing and I'd like them to win as well. If they won a final, it would be a great story. Mm. So I'm tipping with no real confidence, I'm tipping the Saints.
Yeah.
And then you mentioned the Eagles and the Pies. They finish it off on a Saturday night. This is going to be massive. The atmosphere at Elfta Stadium will be great. Not only because it'll be a great game, but of course the Brent Tuckey Cup is up for grabs.
Goodness me.
If the Eagles win, Max, they face another week of home quarantine.
And if they lose, they get 14 more days of home quarantine.
Yes.
Oh, God.
It's an interesting situation.
I'm tipping West Coast. The eighth team doesn't normally win, do they, Max?
No, it is rather rare. And I think this is the least even final of the four by some margin. Just think about what Collingwood would have to do to win the flag this year. They'd have to beat West Coast in Perth, then beat either Port Adelaide in Adelaide or Geelong. Then they probably have to beat Richmond, and then they've got to win a grand final. So, you know, nice and easy. They'll be fine. No, West Coast should win this one, I would like to imagine.
Yeah, the fallout for Collingwood will be fascinating and the conversation around Nathan Buckley. But that is if they lose. There's still a lot to play out this weekend across week one of the final series. Thanks to Max. Thanks to Tom. Thanks to everyone out there for listening and keep clicking back to foxfooty.com.au.
Ta-ta.